We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Not taking our foot off the gas with the Bills. I don't think there's any question. They have one of the best players in the league, and that is the must-see TV that we've been talking about here. What makes me want to go sit in front of the television for a few hours? It's somebody like that, and he's phenomenal. He's fun to watch.
So that's the latest episode of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Sal Capaccio, Matt Bove have their yearly conversation with Mike North, who's, of course, one of the chief schedule makers. And, of course, as you might expect, we're going to get more primetime games. National Football League Vice President of Broadcasting, Mike North. Check it out at the Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast site. Yep. We'll talk with Sal about it a little bit tomorrow. Joining us on the Western Hotline is Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus. Sam, good morning.
Morning. How's it going, guys?
It's going all right. We're going through a thing where the Buffalo Sabres just hired a coach that was their coach 11 years ago and brought him back. And, you know, it happens in hockey. It happens in soccer. David Moyes, West Ham did that a couple times.
We talked about, like, does it ever happen in football?
Is rugby, they hire coaches back? I mean...
not a big thing. It's definitely occasionally done, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're doing it here with the hockey team. And people are happy, so that's good news. It's a bit of a, you know, like a small distraction from the NFL draft, which, of course, is 2 days away. And we are, you know, as locked in as any team. And maybe, I don't know, some of us, myself included, might be freaking out about what the Bills are ultimately going to do. Let's start at the top of the draft, Sam. I saw yesterday as many as six quarterbacks now in the first round. Do you have a number, a good feel on how many it might be? Because the higher the number goes, the better it is for Buffalo, because that's six players that I would consider not really on the, you know, the board.
Yeah, I still think it's probably going to be between four or five, the ones that we've all been expecting to go top 10, and then maybe one of the next two guys, Bo Nix, or Michael Penix Jr., sneaks into the bottom of the first round or in the middle of the first round somewhere. I'd be surprised if all six of those guys went in the first round, but it's possible.
Do you subscribe to Drake May at number two as like a slam dunk versus, I don't know, the betting odds are all over the place. And I wonder, Sam, like this happens every draft year. Are there some guys we've just been staring at too long and we are just hyper analyzing them to death? And maybe May is maybe one of those guys this year.
Yeah, I certainly don't think it's a lock that he goes number two. But you're right. Like it seems sometimes the narrative on a guy starts going in one direction and then it doesn't stop for the entire draft process. We just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And Drake May feels like that guy this process, where right at the start, it was, is Caleb Williams or Drake May the number one overall pick? You know, they were 1 and 1A. And then it was like, no, Drake May's not as good as Caleb Williams. We, you know, look at these flaws, look at the layups he misses, et cetera, et cetera. And then it just kept going. And it was like, Jaden Daniels is probably better than Drake May. And now, don't look now, but J.J. McCarthy's better. And Drake May might slide. And it just seems like we haven't been able to stop the ball once it was rolling. And I think it's gone too far. Like, Drake May, yeah, there's some concerns to his game. He does miss too many layups. But even with those, he's still an incredibly talented guy who had really good production with very little help relative to some of these other guys in an offense that wasn't exactly helping him out. And I think some of the problems you can probably address and fix at the next level. So I feel like the narrative on Drake May has been a little bit too critical, but I think it's real in terms of a lot of people looked at his tape and were less than blown away. And that's why, you know, he's not the betting favorite to go number two right now.
Okay, so, and then a little bit on Daniels, too. Does that kind of sound like to you then that maybe that Daniels going second could be more about May than people falling in love with Daniels? Or would you say that, too? Like, his game, and, like, how would you get to a place, I guess, where you fall in love with Daniels' game?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, I think. The first step was probably a closer look at May made people less excited about him than they were, you know, in abstract terms back in January when it was him and Caleb Williams. And then I think the more you watch Jaden Daniels, the more you do like. And his flaw, his red flag, the thing to be scared of with him, it's a little harder to see. It doesn't jump out the same way that Drake Mays does, where he's just missing some wild throws that really should be routine. The problem with Jaden Daniels generally is, you know, a really high sack rate and a tendency to take too many sacks relative to the pressure that he gets and the kind of hidden negative plays that those create, which I think are still easier to dismiss for a lot of people. It sort of takes a bit more work to put yourself in the headspace where that's a big problem, but it is a big problem. I mean, those are, you look at the list of quarterbacks that have a pressure to sack rate for his career as high as Jaden Daniels, and it's a list of very bad NFL quarterbacks and Joe Burrow. So it's not that you can't succeed with that kind of style, but it's very difficult. So I think when you look at Daniels, there's a lot to like, and that the sort of scary part of his game is a little bit easier to dismiss.
Yeah, the pressure to sack rate thing is interesting because if you look in the league, the guys that don't take sacks are like the McVay-Shanahan offenses and then Mahomes and Allen. And you would think that, you know, there are a lot of things you could look at, but the pressure to sack rate is, for my money, as good as anything in figuring out how good a quarterback can be at pocket management, athleticism, whatever. Like it looks to me, if you can do that on your own, then you're maybe built for any offense. I mean, it's asking a lot to be like Mahomes and Allen, but those are the two guys at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last sort of several years of data and analytics and understanding has led people to work out that isn't just an arbitrary number. It isn't just a product of blocking an offensive line. Like Dan Marino was barely sacked for a decade, and it wasn't because the Miami Dolphins had the greatest offensive line the game had ever seen. They had a good one, but it was because Dan Marino was one of the best quarterbacks of all time at getting the ball out of his hands and avoiding sacks. The same way Peyton Manning always knew where his checkdown was, and as soon as pressure came, was able to just bail on the play and dump the ball off. Like, these guys are incredibly good at that, and it is a quarterback-driven data point, which doesn't mean that you can't influence it with a really good or a really bad offensive line, but I think that the understanding has grown that this is something the quarterback controls more than people thought they did, you know, years ago. So now you have to look at all these quarterbacks through the lens of how they handle pressure and how they handle that data point, or what are the results when pressure comes, because it does tell you a lot about that quarterback. Again, which doesn't mean it's impossible to succeed if you're at the other end of the scale, but those guys that do are very rare.
Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus on the Western Hotline. PFF had their 7-round mock draft. I was at least reading through it yesterday, so I don't know if it came out yesterday or... No, it was yesterday. And in that mock, like, Sam, this draft is going to be so heavily favored towards the offense early on. You guys had 3 quarterbacks and then 3 receivers in the top 6 picks. I mean, we've actually even talked about it with you, like the Julio Jones level trade up for the Bills. Do you feel like this is going to be, one, value and getting that part of it done is so hard in the first place, but it might not even get to a starting point because these receivers are just going to go off the board so quick?
It's possible. I've seen a couple of mocks in the last week where that's been the dynamic. It's been QB and receiver, and they've taken up basically the first 6 picks, and they're all gone. I generally think it is putting all of your eggs in one basket. And usually when it comes to draft strategy, that's not a good plan. But it's weighing the certainty of those top 3 guys against the odds that somebody else will be a better quarter or a better receiver. It's like if you go back a couple of years, you know, and we were debating, was it Jerry Jeudy? Was it CeeDee Lamb? Was it Henry Ruggs is the best receiver from that draft? And the best receiver ended up being Justin Jefferson. Now, CeeDee Lamb was one of the top 3, and he's become really, really good. But you would have gotten a better guy if you'd hung around to the 5th receiver in that draft and just played your odds the way the Vikings did. So, look, I think the Bills will be looking at this and almost certainly have a much higher grade on those top 3 guys, any of whom I think would be the number 1 receiver prospect in most drafts. and I think there is a pretty big drop-off between those guys and whoever wide receiver four is in your book. But then I think you have a group of like 4 through 20 that are all very similarly ranked, have a wide variety of skill sets and sort of body types and styles. And I think you're probably better off just using volume and trying to draft 2 or 3 of those guys instead of putting all the eggs in one basket and hoping that you don't get the guy of the 3 who doesn't work out.
I wonder about this class versus others, because – you know, we can make this about receiver or defensive end or tackles or anything, but, you know, that year you mentioned about Jefferson, the first receiver off the board, it is Ruggs, right? And he's 12th, and CeeDee Lamb's a little after him, and Judy. So you had the top 10 went without any receivers, and here we have a class we're talking about maybe 3 in the top 6 or 3 in the top 7. So I wonder if there's any sort of arithmetic that makes it where, yes, waiting till the 5th guy, 4th or 5th guy might be good in a class where you can't differentiate. But as you just kind of laid out, the 3 at the top of this class, it sure seems like it's not exactly any old wide receiver group.
Yeah, there's always this constant tension between, you know, playing the odds and the uncertainty of knowing your rankings are wrong, right? Everybody's rankings are wrong. We've no idea. We might be directionally okay, but every single person's rankings are going to be wrong somewhere. That's just the nature of the draft. Nobody is batting 1,000 here, versus the very real certainty that some players are better than others. And most of the time, you're going to be right on that particular one. One sort of element that gets overlooked with the Julio Jones trade, if you look back at that draft in terms of receivers basically stopped after Julio Jones. It went A.J. Green, then Julio Jones, and you're like, wow, this is an amazing receiver draft. And then there's basically no more receivers in that draft. So the Falcons went really aggressive to go get a guy, not just because he was Julio Jones and he was amazing, but because if they were looking for receivers, there were no more for the rest of that draft. They weren't getting another one. I don't think that's the case for Buffalo this year. Like, they could go and do the same thing if they believe Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers is Julio Jones and they want to go and secure that guy. But it's not the same case as that year where there are no more receivers. There are going to be a lot more receivers in this draft that can come in and make very good contributions, even if they can't be Julio Jones.
Sam Monson, PFF on the Western Hotline. Brandon Bean in his 6 first-round picks. Sam, he's traded up in 4 of them, four of them. Most of those are smaller trade-ups, which I think is much more likely than what we've just been talking about, like going into the top 10. If he moves up, I mean, that's only for Brian Thomas, right? Like, are you thinking a couple of picks for Mitchell? I guess if they were to move up, would you assume that would, in your mind, be that, oh, Bean likes Brian Thomas?
Brian Thomas is definitely the most likely one. Yeah, it kind of depends where everybody has A.D. Mitchell ranked, because he's somebody that I think a lot of people have as wide receiver 4, and because this receiver class is so deep, it's difficult to know how teams are going to approach it. Are they going to wait on receiver knowing that 2, 3, and 4, the rounds are going to be stuffed full of wide receivers, or are they still going to take those guys because they're really good players? So somebody like A.D. Mitchell could go, you know, he could conceivably fall all the way out of the first round because there's so many of these guys, or he could go in the middle of the first round, because once you get those first 3 guys off the board, there are still wide receiver needy teams in the teens, and some of them likely have that guy as the 4th best receiver available. So it's entirely plausible that they don't like the idea that he would slide there to 28 if he's their guy and want to jump up and make sure they get him, you know, a few picks earlier.
Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. The side effect of all this, you know, whether it's 4, 5, 6 quarterbacks, the tackle class is deep, the receiver class is deep, is I should look what the record for fewest defensive players is in the first round. But this could be a year where if you don't need any help on your offense and you wanted to get a defensive player, you might get the first defensive player 8th or the 3rd defensive player 15th, 16th. It seems like a year where if that's what you need, good news, because the value in the defensive part of the draft is gonna fall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I think the first defender off the board could come at number 8, and he might be the only one in the top 10. I mean, you can definitely look at it. You can frame it in such a way that if you're Atlanta and the only thing you're really interested in is defense, theoretically, you've got the number 1 pick in the draft. Like, nobody's going to touch a guy that you're interested in before your pick, and you're picking 8th overall. That's basically unprecedented. And, yeah, there are going to be teams picking in the teens that are going to get the top player available at the position they're interested in anyway. It's absolutely Christmas for teams that are only focusing on defense in this draft, because I don't think it's a bad defensive draft. It's just that it's a crazy offensive draft. It's not that, you know, there's just no talent there and these guys are terrible and they're, you know, it's a bad year to be looking for defense because there's nobody good available. It's just that the offensive talent is crazy.
I will begrudgingly then ask this question because we all want the Bills to draft receiver. But if they thought, hey, we love, you know, like you mentioned, we like 20 of the receivers. We'll wait till 60 or we'll trade up in round two. Defensive players that would make sense for them at 28. I feel like Chop Robinson is always the first name that gets mentioned, Sam. So whether it's him or somebody else, is there somebody that makes sense for you if the Bills wanted to wait on receiver in round one?
Yeah, I think Robinson does make a lot of sense. He's the guy, defensive end is a difficult spot, sort of edge rusher, because you tend to get those top few guys and they go reasonably early in the first round. And then there isn't a good track record with these low first round edge rushers working out. But there tends to be a very steep drop off between the elite edge rushers drafted and then the guys that teams sort of circle back for at the bottom of the first round, because I think they're treated a little bit like quarterback, where you sort of force it at the bottom of the first round because you think, oh, we need an edge rusher. This is the next tier down. We'll grab this guy before the drop-off starts. But the drop-off's already happened. Like, you're already forcing that pick. Robinson's the one guy where I think that wouldn't be the case. I think you wouldn't be forcing it. I think he does belong in that conversation with the top pass rushers. Maybe he's not as well-rounded or as complete a player as those other guys, but in terms of rushing the passer and being a situational guy early, I think he can put himself in that spot and definitely make an impact. So Robinson, I think, is definitely the obvious answer at that spot if they want to go defense.
Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. Sam, thanks for the time. Enjoy it this weekend.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
Sam Monson on the West Her Hotline.
7-round mock, they had the Bills going corner in round two. After Adonai Mitchell, which I feel like we're getting to a point where like 80% of mock drafts have the Bills drafting Adonai Mitchell.
I saw one that had the Chiefs jump to 24 to take Adonai Mitchell, and the Bills take Xavier Worthy. Mocks, mocks, and more mocks. Lots of mocks.
Do you think the Chiefs would do that?
Yes.
I mean, the thing is he is what? Like, just there's stuff there with him, right?
Yeah.
And do they want to sign back up for that with what Kadarius Toney has been for them as an experiment?
Reggie Rice missing multiple games, probably suspension.
You know what I mean? Like, would they want? I don't know if I want to attach Mitchell to those guys, though. Right? Like, Rice's situation is legal. Like, that's a bad. I mean, what he would going 130 miles per hour, like, just that's beyond reckless in a life sense. Toney's just, I guess, kind of he's a dummy in some stuff, right? Social media, he's always climbing into fans' DMs, and he's just going after him. Toney's just, like, it's other stuff. But well, I wonder if they'd want more of a guy they have less personality questions about than Mitchell.
To that point, Matt Miller was on with One Bills Live yesterday and laid out a case against trading down. Want to play that for you when we get back. We'll take more of your calls on Lindy Ruff. If you'd like, Marty joins us in an hour, Marty Baron. But when we get back, if you are a trade-down fan, just drop a few spots. Matt Miller lays out a very compelling case for why that is not such a slam dunk. We'll play that next, kick it around. The draft, Lindy's back, all for you here on WGR.
I will say this, it's specific to Buffalo. You have to look at so many teams right there with you as being in the same area of need that you're in. You know, we know that Kansas City wants to get a wide receiver. San Francisco could be after a wide receiver. You cannot rule out the Detroit Lions at wide receiver. And then at the top of round two, you have the Carolina Panthers sitting right there at 33. You have the New England Patriots sitting right there. There are so many wide receiver needy teams. And I think that's where with Buffalo, you have to be somewhat conservative, because when everyone in the league knows what your perceived top need is, pretty easy to get jumped.
Matt Miller on with One Bills Live. I was listening yesterday. I made a point to listen to that when I saw they posted Matt Miller's coming on. Like the work he does. He's the one that Joe I've referenced something he said very early on in this draft process, which is if you want a receiver in the first round, you can have one.
Mm-hmm.
The point he made in that clip, not the one we just played, what I'm referencing is lots of them are just going to be worth it. Just take one. And the trade down idea, by the way, good morning, Jeremy and Joe. We've talked plenty about Lindy, his return. We'll continue to take your calls on that if you want. Marty Baron joining us at 9:30. But on this point from Matt Miller, it's the fly in the ointment for me on every trade down conversation. When you say I want to trade down, you're just assuming a few things. One, that the Bills have a tier of players. There are five that are basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that they could trade down the exact number of spots where they wouldn't lose anyone in that tier. And as he just points out, end of the first round. Okay, it's 28. I don't think we should take Xavier Legette here. We have him as a 34th ranked player. Let's trade out, and there's four or five guys that are the same. How many spots can you go down? If you have five players on the tier, how many spots could you safely go? Seven? Mm-hmm. And that's sure. A gamble.
Well, and also, what am I getting? I better be getting a third round pick.
Okay.
Because to me, I'm not totally against trading down. I'm totally against trading down for anything on day three. I already have too many day three picks.
Mm-hmm.
To getting a fourth round pick, like, I don't even want it. Keep it. I'd rather move down six spots and not have the fourth round pick. That's not real. But like, just like, what do I need it for?
Yeah, they have a lot. I guess you would.
I would need a third round pick to even entertain a conversation about moving down. Can I move down? Can I move down five spots and get a third? That might be tough. I don't know. Like, you also need a team to have a differing opinion than you do on, you know, a certain position or whether a guy is worth it. They've got to be motivated enough to come up five spots and spend a third round pick.
And the thing I just get to with this, we talked about it yesterday with Sal. Yes, you'd be gaining an asset, but I would always be viewing it as you are giving up control of the board. You only come up once every 32 picks. Unless you've acquired others or you've traded, right? The Bills come up at 28 and at 60. Those are the only two times they control the board. If you trade down from 28 to into the second round, 37, the Chargers. Mm-hmm. The Chargers go up because they want a receiver because, you know, they're completely bereft of receivers, even though they might take one fifth overall. Now I've got how many teams that could.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
That are picking Detroit, Baltimore, San Francisco, Kansas City. In the second round, it goes Carolina, New England, Arizona, Washington. So all those teams are now in front of me, and they control the board, and someone can jump into those spots. So you kind of, by moving down five spots, you open every other team to jump in there. Your board, we got five guys that are about the same. Okay, there are five teams out there that have one guy they like, and it's one of those five on every one of those boards. Like, you gave it up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to. I understand like the concept, but
I just think if you're at 28, listen. Just there does become a time where if you're at 28, you just got to do it, because if you part of training down would be, well, there's not a guy we are so in love with here. Right at that position specifically, if it's never going to happen. You pick 28th every year. You pick 25th every year. You never pick 5th. You never pick 6th or 7th. If they're ever going to take a wide receiver, the guy's not going to be a perfect prospect. It's just not going to happen. They pick too late every year for that to happen. There's an element of you got to start taking your swings, even if you don't love the pitch. And just waiting and waiting, and let's trade down this year. Well, let's wait this year. Let's wait till the second round and pick a defensive player. Just enough looking at the pitch as it goes by you. Swing at it. Like, once in a while, I need them to do that. They've already dug themselves a hole by waiting this long to not just pick a guy that might not be the perfect fit or might not be the perfect skill set or there are question marks about, man, you pick at 28. You can't have it all.
Yeah, and there's something we said for stay true to your board. It's one of the funny things about the draft that's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's an oxymoron, but you got to stick to your board. Oh, the board that we all know isn't perfect. We know it's not right. One of the reasons you shouldn't trade up is because it's not that unusual that players that are the fifth at a position are the best and you don't have to invest the same. So you're at 28. You've got five players that are about the same. Or let's trade down five spots. Okay. Yeah. The team selecting directly behind you, they have a board where they don't have five players in the same tier. Who had it right? I don't know. Treating the board as if it's gospel to begin with, you kind of got to know that it's not perfect. You do the best you can and you trust your process, I guess. But the trade down to me, it's almost like getting greedy. It really is getting greedy. And Matt Miller there says, you might have to be conservative. Consider that for a moment, his language. The Bills might have to be conservative and not trade down. I'm glad somebody says it. A trade down is gambling. It's, sure, I'll take an extra asset to move down and give control of the board back to everybody else until I'm up again. So, doesn't mean it has to be bad. We'll see how it plays out. But I don't think it's just as easy as saying, oh, I'd like to trade down and add a pick. Yeah. Someone's got to come up for somebody that they like, and I've got to have the same number of players I'm willing to pass on. All the while, all the other teams do have someone they like.
There is one outcome where I am perfectly fine with trading down, but I've got to have two things happen. They've got to get a third. That is number one. They cannot get anything less than a third. Fourth, fifth, sixth round picks are irrelevant for this team right now. They have too many already. The other thing is, you got to know not only that you're going to have a receiver that's in the tier that we're talking about that's still going to be available to wherever you move down, but it's got to be the right one.
Well, hold on. Like, let's do your draft. You said you got to be a third round pick. Okay, the Bills are 28th. Where do you want to go down to? How many picks?
What's the furthest I can go down and get a third?
The furthest you can do,
or what? Excuse me. What's the closest I can get and still get a third?
Okay. Well, the cheapest ranked third round pick is 100 points.
Okay,
and that drops you from 28 to about 33.
That's at Carolina.
34. New England.
New England. Okay.
So you got to trade down six spots to get the, and that's worth the last pick in the third round. That's a supplemental pick.
Right.
If you want a third round pick, you're talking about going down a good chunk. A middle of the road third round pick is 160.
Yeah,
draft points for the Bills. That's dropping 12 spots. I'm at 40.
I'm nervous about that because it's not just for me. Well, I want the best receiver on the board when I get there. I'm at a point where I don't want just any old receiver. You know what I mean? Like, what I would be afraid of there is you're on the board at 28, and someone comes to you with that offer. Hey, you want to move down 12 spots? We'll give you a third-round pick that you don't have. Now I go back to my room, and I debate it. And I'm looking at the board, and it's going to really be dependent on who's left there. And maybe there actually isn't an outcome where I would think that's a good idea because, you know, by that point, let's assume the top four are gone. But Mitchell is still on the board. Leggett is still on the board. McConkey is. Worthy, Coleman. Like, if I'm looking at guys that really fit what I'm looking for, which is a guy to play on the boundary, big plays, potential number one wide receiver upside, and can run a full route tree, how many guys am I really looking at that fit exactly what the Bills need? Is it two? Is it Mitchell and Leggett at that point? Like, McConkey's even got his question marks. We had a Georgia guy on that I was all in on. McConkey could just play on the outside when he shows up at the NFL. Then we had a Georgia guest on and be like, I think he might play more in the slot. That scares me off. Xavier Worthy, more of a role player, right? More of a big play guy that you're going to use in creative ways. You've got Roman Wilson. What if Roman Wilson's the top receiver on the board? Well, I don't need Roman Wilson. He only plays in the slot, and I have two guys that already play in the slot and a tight end. Like, the thing that worries me about 12 picks down is I feel like you have two receivers that are probably going to be on the board at 28, at least one of them, that are the perfect fits for your scheme and your needs on the offense. And if you trade down, I feel like you're accepting drafting a receiver that probably doesn't fit as well.
And there's a question here because you know, are they going to try and play more positionless football? And does Joe Brady say, I don't need a type? If they have two receivers on the same tier, one plays the boundary and one plays the slot primarily, can the Bills afford to treat them like they're the same?
I don't think they can.
No, neither do I.
I don't think they can.
Neither do I. And there's a point to be made here about drafting for need versus being too stocked at one position. You know, if you could take a corner at 28, you could. You're putting somebody on the bench.
Right.
A starter. You take a corner, and either a first-round pick is on the bench, or maybe even two. I need to fill spots. So, 803-0550, a couple tweets on this, of course. The fifth-year option, you lose that flexibility with trading out of the first as well. And, I mean, Bean would have to go to bed not knowing what's going to happen in the second round. And all those teams get a full day to think about what they want to do. When Friday starts, the first pick of the second round, I don't know how often it's traded, but at least it's always treated as it's like the start of a second draft. Everybody goes back. What happened? What did they do? Okay, we have almost 24 hours to think about it. Attack it from here. Anybody that looks at the Bills, if they were to trade down, would say they're still going to need one. They might be the team to go get it. 803-0550. Lindy Ruff press conference, 1 o'clock. We'll carry it live. Sabres live to be extended as we carry the press conference with Lindy Ruff and Kevin Adams. They each released statements yesterday, and they will do it today. Presser
Lindy
at 1.
Lindy is back. It's going to be very, very weird, I think, when he takes the podium. And also cool.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect.
Compare your guys to the 0506 Sabres. Let's just do that. You want to take the next 10 minutes and tell us which guy reminds you of Tim Connelly? Go ahead. Who's your Derrick Roy? Who's your Campbell?
Lindy, first question.
Was it a goal in 99?
Well, I'm going to the other one. In taking the job, did you get Kevin to admit the Hurricanes were lucky?
Oh, that's gold. Yes, that needs to be question number one. You should drive down there and ask that question. I'm not even kidding. Do you remember what the start?
You should drive down and ask that question.
Do you remember what the first question was he got when he was introduced as Dallas Stars head coach?
Was it a goal?
No, it wasn't even that.
Oh.
I think I remember the exact way that this question was asked was, are you willing to admit that it was a goal?
Wow.
Willing to admit that it was a goal? By the way, did not say yes to that question, which was one of his finest moments.
This is how you know that we're living in a simulation or everything is scripted. Lindy coached the Stars. And now he coaches the Sabres again against with the GM being a guy that was on the team of the team that stole their cup because they got lucky. Sorry, Kevin Adams. Still sensitive. Lucky.
They got lucky. I listened back to Lindy did. How often does this happen? Lindy did a post-fired press conference at the arena after the Sabres fired him 11 years ago.
I remember that. They gave him that courtesy.
Yeah.
Do you want to know something I remember very specifically about that press conference? This is a very dumb detail, but I think there are pictures of it in the paper. Harbor Center had not yet been built.
Okay.
And that whole lot was fenced off, and someone spelled out, "Thank you, Lindy," in plastic cups in the fencing.
That's awesome.
I can't get that image in my head.
Yeah. All I was going to mention there, that's actually cooler. All I was going to mention was Lindy said in that press conference when talking about his regret of not winning the cup in Buffalo, he specifically mentioned, maybe if we hadn't got all those injuries in 06.
Yep.
He already thinks it.
Well, Lindy, second question. Have you talked to Kevin about the importance of depth on defense? Like so many guys that you can lose four.
Yep.
803-0550. 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a call. I got instant trivia. Lindy-based instant trivia to get to. Marty Braun at 9:30, too. Be caller 5 to win a pair of tickets to see Burt Kreischer's Fully Loaded Comedy Festival at Darien Lake Amphitheater on June 23rd, courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Marty Baron coming up at 9:30. Lindy Ruff's reintroductory press conference.
Reunion press conference.
Sure. 1 o'clock this afternoon, we'll carry that live. You know how I know it's spring? We have a robin in our yard, a robin with a nest.
Yeah.
Sitting on eggs.
Wow.
For hours. Just sitting there.
Where, in like the tree or?
So our garage, there's a little, like a lantern light on the side of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Nest has been built on top of that. Robin sitting in it.
Okay.
And just parked.
All right. We have a nest currently on top of the light right in next to our front door. And we have to debate whether to remove that or not. Because it's a little bit in the way, I guess. Not really, I guess.
My Google search indicates it might be 2 weeks of sitting on the eggs.
2 weeks?
And then maybe
so
more.
So Robin does not move for 2 weeks?
It's there a lot.
Huh.
And then there's time sitting on the babies?
Okay.
Keeping them warm?
Do the dogs know that it's there?
It doesn't matter. It's too high.
And sure.
Yes. And the Robin's
goose,
not.
Goose can jump pretty high.
He can. But the Robin is not afraid of the dogs because the dogs are laying underneath it. Just okay. Hanging out.
But they know it's there.
I don't think they have any idea.
They don't even know?
Okay. No.
No clue?
Yep. All right. Marty Baron coming up. Sabres instant trivia. Maybe a little more on Lindy. Talked a lot about Lindy at the start of the show. Got some NFL draft stuff in this past hour, so
also
we'll shift gears.
Maybe you sneak in at some point. The Utah NHL owner, what his plans are for the nickname.
Uh-oh. He revealed it?
He revealed how they're going to decide.
Fan vote?
A bracket. They're going to have a fan vote bracket, I guess, to decide what the team nickname is. And he said he has a plan for all the AI bots not interrupting the vote in some way. I don't know what that means.
Okay.
But he's going to have a bracket, a fan vote bracket to decide what the name's going to be.
Okay.
We don't know the options yet, though. They filed trademarks for Utah Venom.
Terrible.
Utah Yeti.
Terrible.
Utah HC.
Terrible.
I don't remember the other ones off the top of my head.
I've fully come to grips with the fact that you can't name a sports team and make me happy anymore.
No, go ahead. What would you name it then?
No.
Did you like mine? Salt Lake Stags?
That's okay.
How about the Pioneers?
Totally okay. Utah Blizzard was another one, by
terrible.
The way.
Terrible.
Utah Fury.
Awful. My new pet peeve is, like, no, they should name it this because then we will call the arena the blank. And we'd never actually do that anywhere. We don't call.
Yeah, what do we call?
Oh, they'll call it the Crack House in Seattle. Do that. Nobody does that.
That's right.
Oh, well.
I think we thought they were going to call Highmark Stadium when it was New Era Field the Cap.
Right.
That never happened.
Oh, we'll name them the Venom and maybe we'll call it the Snake Pit. Like, no, you're going to call it PPG Arena or whatever its name is.
Don't we call, though, the Sharks Arena the Shark Tank?
We do call that the Shark Tank.
But that's maybe the only
one. That might be the only one.
Yeah. There's no football stadium.
We don't call
it
the Bag of Leaves. Where the Leafs play.
Leaves. Oh, that's
we don't call the, like, the Bruins Arena the Bears Den.
The Bears.
What would the Sabres be?
The Sheath.
The Sheath.
The Sheath?
Or the Saber. You put a Saber, goes in a Sheath.
Let's start calling it the Sheath. Let's start calling KeyBank Center
the
Sheath.
You're over here objecting to me calling them Sabes, and you're going to say yes to Sheath?
But I've admitted that we've now seen Sabes in action everywhere. So if we're doing Sabes, then we should be doing Sheath.
I'm thinking of some other names here.
Not the
We don't call the Flyers building the aviary.
The aviary. Well, with the Penguins, we call it the igloo, don't we?
We do. Well, the old building actually looked like an igloo.
Okay.
The old building. The new one does not.
What would the Lightning be?
The
cloud.
Right.
Right, the cloud, because the bolt's on the ice
right.
Below it. I think we should do this for everybody. Everyone, you're renaming your names. No more sponsors. We're going to eliminate all that, and you're going to start. Like, the Golden Knights, you are now going to be the Castle.
See, but that's cool. Like, that makes sense.
And but it kind of does.
It's got, like, pillars like a castle, so.
Right.
The Penguin Arena, very important. It was called the Igloo. It looked like an igloo. The old one, go look it up.
Let me look. What was it called?
Melon Arena.
Melon Arena.
It had a very distinct
okay,
look.
Yes, it very
it
much
looked
this
like
looks
an
like an igloo. They
could
do that on purpose? It looks like
it
an igloo.
It doesn't even matter. They could have been the Pittsburgh Horses, and you would have called it the igloo. It looked like an igloo.
Yeah.
So if they want to build an arena that looks like something perfect for, you know, whatever, Aaron tweets in, the Browns have the dog pound. That's right. They're not the dogs, though. They're
although,
the Browns.
The stadium's not the dog pound, right? I thought, isn't that like a section of the, like how the rock pile is a section of the Bills stadium?
It's kind of both.
It's both, okay.
It's kind of both. My point is, we're not just going to name a team and then, oh, now we're going to call their arena this.
So you think if they do like a bee theme name, we're not going to call their arena the Hive?
Oh, maybe. Maybe. We're just not going to go too far with it.
Okay.
The Yeti Den. They call T-Mobile Arena in Vegas the Fortress. Who does?
Who calls them the Fortress?
Brayton wrote that. Who?
Yeah.
I'm going to the Fortress this weekend. Say that in conversation.
See what you get.
See what you get.
I'm going to start saying the sheath in conversation. I'm going to start doing it.
Me
see
too.
If we can get that off the ground.
What time are you guys heading to the sheath?
The sheath, yeah.
What else would you store a saber?
It's a sheath, not a holster, is not for a sword.
I don't know. Okay. Sure. There's probably a different name for it. Anyway, like I said,
you could do it something with buffaloes, right? Although we're about the pack.
Where do the buffalo roam?
The prairie. We're not doing that. I think it'd have to be the sheath.
I'm allowed to be this bitter because I just said I admit nothing can make me happy with these.
Yes, you did admit that.
I said that.
Front
end. You can't do it. You can't do it a good job. Although I do like the Utah Archers. I think that's good.
Utah Archers.
Archers, yeah.
What? Oh, because of the arch on
tribute to Arches National Park. Okay. And, you know, you can make a cool logo, but I think they already have a team in the some third-tier lacrosse team.
Thank you to a listener who pointed out that they also filed the trademark for Utah Outlaws.
Decent.
Okay, there we go. Decent, he gives
but
us for the Outlaws.
This will be one of those ones where the league doesn't like connotations of illegal behavior.
And then we'll call the arena the Saloon.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Saloon.
We'll definitely call it the Saloon. I'll just tell friends I'm going to the Saloon.
Yep.
The Ducks used to play on the pond. Eh.
I think I remember that one vaguely.
Also, a sword is apparently held in a scabbard. All right, going to the scabbard.
No, I don't like scabbard.
Let's go live to the scabbard for Lindy Ruff's press conference. The scabbard.
I don't like that one.
Thank you for the clarification. All right. Sorry about this. This is sometimes I get worked up. Marty Brown, 9:30, and some trivia, but other stuff. Whatever. Who knows? We'll yell about the Broncos uniforms.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.